Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. Joining us on the program today is Tom Franklin. His novel Crooked Letter just came out in paperback, and he joins us by telephone from Mississippi. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vic. I'm glad to be here.
Tom, I read this book when it came out in hardcover, and I said to myself, man, oh man, I got to interview this guy, and I couldn't interview you for the hardback, but I got a second chance.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I heard you on NPR, though, when the book came out in hardcover. I think you were on Weekend Edition.
That's right, I was.
And that very same day, I was reading the Dayton Daily News, and I read this. Do you read your reviews?
I do, yes.
Okay, I read this review in the Dayton Daily News that said, quote, "This is not a book that has an easily predictable outcome. It is too clever, too entertaining, and ultimately so satisfying that you will find yourself grinning as you reach the end. It's all here. Compelling characters, a wickedly ingenious plot, brilliant dialogue, and a smashing surprise ending," end quote. I wrote that.
Did you?
I did. And I actually got to see a blurb in your paperback. I was so excited.
Oh, well, thank you for writing the review.
Well, I love the book, and we have that surprise ending. We've got all this stuff that I don't know if we want to talk about it on the radio, but I understand that you wrote this book in Brazil.
I did. I started it back in 2003, not knowing at all what it was about. I had a vague idea that it was about two brothers, and I struggled for a couple of years. I thought it might be about a mechanic with no customers. I thought it might be about a small-town police officer. And I tried three or four different stories. And finally, when I realized that all three of those together were the story, did it finally start to gel. By that point, my wife and I and our two kids had gone down to Brazil. She's a poet. Her name's Beth Ann Finley. And she wanted to go down there and study the poet Elizabeth Bishop, who lived down there for about 21 years. And so she got a Fulbright and shipped us all down there. So we wound up staying for 6 months in Belo Horizonte in Brazil, which is the third largest city there, about the size of Chicago. And I had 6 months down there with nothing to do but write. And so I wrote, I think, about 80 or 85% of this book down there in Brazil.
And you talk about it a little bit in the back of the paperback. And you really, when you first got there, you weren't sure that you could write at all. You didn't know what to do, did you?
No, I didn't. You know, I mean, I love television, and I would try to turn on the TV. That's a great distraction from writing, by the way, television. I would turn on the TV, and it would be in Portuguese, and I couldn't watch anything. So I was without my normal distractions. I couldn't go out to the bars because I didn't speak the language. I just had to stay by the pool in our 12-story apartment building. And finally, the pages begin to add up, and I sat down there with literally nothing else to do but write. And that's the way the book finally got done, because it was a hard one for me to write.
It's really a story about friendship, and a friendship between two kind of unlikely guys, a guy named Larry Ott and a guy named Silas Jones. And we go back and forth through time to when they were kids, when they first met, and then we see their friendship develop and what happens to the friendship. And then as adults, we have all this drama going on. And in the back of the book, you added this really helpful information where you basically confess that Larry's a lot like you.
Yeah, you know, I got a theory that I think being down there in South America, writing about the American South, I began to draw on my own life, because that's, you know, all I had was memory. I didn't have any. I couldn't walk around and look at the land and describe the way a tree looked or something, because it was all from memory. And I think I just stirred up a bunch of memories, and suddenly a lot of things that happened to me were happening to my character of named Larry Ott.
Scary Larry.
Scary Larry. Yeah, I was never called Scary Tommy, but I was not popular the way Larry's not popular. I was obsessed with Stephen King. My dad was a mechanic. Larry and I have similar first dates. Larry's first date, he's supposed to take a girl to the drive-in movie, but she needs to go see her real boyfriend and tells her she's expected a baby, so he agrees and drops her off and then goes to the drive-in alone. And winds up, people he know pull in behind him, and he holds up his hand under a blanket as if it's his date there beside him, and pretends that's his date. And I did that too. That really happened to me back in about the late 1970s.
Well, I'm glad you confessed to that, because when I read that in the book, I thought, how could he make this up?
Yeah, you know, truth is so much stranger than fiction, and so much more fun.
And there's a lot of things that you confess were kind of turning up in this book, and we'll leave that to your readers to figure out what some of those things are, because this is really helpful at the back of the paperback, where you have this information that's been added, that, where you talk about how you wrote it in Brazil and how the hitchhikers and these various scenes that we discover in the book are things that, that really happened in your life, and you just somehow plugged into them and turned them into fiction.
Yeah, you know, those events that you remember from your own life, you know, are seemingly unconnected, you know, but to put them in fiction, they have to be connected. And so, you know, what I just found threads to connect all those things that happened to me, you know, and the thread is the fact that Larry's first date is never seen again after he picks her up. You know, I know just exactly where my first date is. She is alive and well. So that's the difference between his first date and mine. And, you know, and when I tell that story a lot, my first date story, and, you know, our dating my hand. But when I tell it, it's funny. But and I tried to write it for years as a comic essay, but I couldn't make it funny on the page. And so, you know, using it here in Crooked Letter, it's not funny at all. It's very serious what happens to Larry. It shapes the rest of his life, that one night.
And those are bird calls you're hearing in the background, because our guest is sitting outside, and it must be a beautiful day there.
Oh, it's almost 90 here in Oxford. Those are mockingbirds and blue jays and redbirds and robins, I think.
Well, it adds to the ambient sound of our interview, and I like that. My guest is Tom Franklin. His novel Crooked Letter, just came out in paperback, and the title is a real Mississippi kind of title, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's how I in Alabama, which is where I'm from, learned how to spell Mississippi. M-I, crooked letter I, humpback I. But since the books came out, I found out that a lot of people all over the country learn to spell it that way, Northeast and people from California. So it's just a mnemonic device that kids, you know, used to teach kids how to spell Mississippi. But I did grow up learning it here, and most people from the South do know what it means. But I've had people in Wisconsin say, or, you know, or out in Seattle, who did not know what crooked letter meant.
I'm reluctant to talk about the plot lines in this book, because you're so tricky here and clever, and I'm wondering if you could talk about it and not give away too much. I guess I'd feel more secure with you doing it than me.
Well, you know, honestly, I never thought of it as so much of a mystery. It seems to me that the mysterious elements are pretty obvious once you start to read the book. I mean, I'm glad it surprises people, but there are, for as many people as are surprised, there are those who say, you know, I saw where it was going. I wasn't surprised. You know, I mean, I hope they still like the book, because it's really about the characters, and, you know, more so than the events. But it did occur to me at some point that there are two missing girls in this book, and I've got to figure out what happened to them. I was writing the story not knowing where the two girls really had gone. I had ideas, but it did occur to me, you know, I've got to figure out who did this. And I didn't want to write any really graphic, you know, graphic crime stuff in the book. I didn't want it to be that kind of book. I wanted to keep it toned down a bit if I could. It occurred to me who the real perpetrator was, and at that point, I began to write about that character.
And poor Larry. Larry has got this mechanics business, and as he grows up, he's running the mechanics business, and his buddy, Silas, is now the town cop, and Larry's the mechanic who never has any customers. I mean, this is kind of sad.
I think it's very sad. I think he's one of the saddest people that I know.
And that's you. I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, I think all of us teenagers have what we perceive to be really sad lives. And I was, in fact, deeply unhappy in a lot of ways in the decade of my 20s. I had kind of a bad romantic situation, and I was lonely for much of the time, and I worked constantly. I worked often 80 hours a week and went to school constantly, so I didn't have much of a social life. So I think I was, you know, in a lot of ways sad, and I know that I was lonely, and I tried to draw on that stuff to come up with Larry.
And this town, I'm guessing that this imaginary town is ripped right out of your memory, too. There's got to be a lot of towns like this down there.
Oh, it's absolutely. There's a town in Alabama that this town is, that Chabot, Mississippi, is based on, and it's Fulton, Alabama. The mill has since closed. When I was researching the book, I'd go down there and get my hair cut at the barbershop across from the mill, and I'd watch the mill and listen to the mill. But it's, in the last year or so, it's closed. That ambient noise is a little airplane.
I hear it. Yeah, I thought maybe you were taking off. You were running away.
No, I'm staying here.
I love that. little private plane going by there, little Cessna, probably.
Yep.
So before the plane interrupted you, you were talking about Chabot, and that sounds like a French name.
Well, you know, actually, that is the name of my wife's college roommate. Denise Chabot was the Notre Dame soccer captain when they were there in, I guess it was probably 1994. And I'm crazy about this woman, Denise Chabot, and it seemed like a nice, fun way, you know, tribute to pay to her.
Let's talk about the mothers. I think the mothers are really important in this story.
Okay, I do too. They seem to me to be doing the best with what they have, and what they have seems to be, you know, bad hands. They seem to have each been dealt bad hands, and a lot of that, I think, is their relationship with their respective relationships with Carl Ott, who's Larry's father. Larry's father does not like him because he, I think, ultimately does not like his wife. He doesn't like. I think he's in love with someone else, and so Larry and his mother both feel this from this cold, distant man who is an alcoholic and capable of real meanness. And Larry's mother, I think, tries to take some of the sting away from that by being very kind to Larry and, in fact, spoiling him. And she has a special prayer she prays with him every night that he'll find a special friend. I think she is a very good mother, but also she is not afraid to defend what is hers if she feels that is threatened. Silas's mother, Alice Jones, on the other hand, has been dealt probably arguably a worse hand, and has a much harder life, including the fact that Silas, she has to get him out of town at a certain point for a certain reason.
Mm-hmm.
The one person that she loves, she has to push away, and ultimately, I think, can't quite forgive him for not being as strong a man as she wants him to be. I think he grows into that man, as you know, as the book progresses and ends, but I don't think that she didn't live to see that.
I guess there's a couple of key points we should probably point out to listeners, and these are that the time period of the 1970s, of course, we're in the Deep South, and Larry is white and Silas is black.
Yes.
And this adds a whole lot of extra dramatic tension to the story, doesn't it?
I think so. I didn't plan on having Silas being black until a friend of mine recommended that to me, an African-American friend of mine, a writer named David Wright, recommended that I try that, and I did. And, it seems an obvious and logical choice now, but it wasn't at the beginning. I was a bit daunted by trying to write from a black man's point of view, you know, not an I perspective, but a he perspective, but the camera over Silas's shoulder and delivering summaries of his thoughts. You know, I was nervous about that.
We've talked a lot about Larry and not too much about Silas. And Larry's my favorite character, but Silas has this unique perspective of Larry that really helps us to know who Larry is.
I think that's right. And Silas left and, you know, has seen the world and has come back and has a much broader perspective than Larry does. And, I think Silas is also a good police officer. I think he makes a couple of very intuitive moves as a constable early on in the book, especially.
We're talking to Tom Franklin about his novel Crooked Letter. Crooked Letter. It just came out in paperback. He joins us by telephone from somewhere outside of his house in Oxford, Mississippi. That's where you can hear the birds and the passing planes. And is the water pretty high down there? I know it's pretty high around him. Memphis. You're close to Memphis, aren't you?
Yeah, we're about an hour and 10 minutes from Memphis. The water's very high now, yes. We're all kind of nervous.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you on high ground there?
No, I'm real low. In fact, we just had our flood insurance reassessed. Now my flood insurance has gone way up, so no, we're not on high ground.
Well, good luck with that.
Thanks.
Tom, you spent many years on this book. You put it away. You came back to it. You ended up writing it in Brazil. And that was really the key to actually getting it done, wasn't it?
Absolutely it was. Just, having the time to do it. And I think also being taken out, I found that leaving a spot gives you a fresher perspective on it. You know, I grew up in Alabama, but didn't, and left Alabama in my 30s to go north to Arkansas, which, you know, that's north to me, and got out of the deep South, and I think gained a newer and better perspective on it. So perhaps the same, you know, just leaving the South and going to an entirely different South was instructive for me and certainly helped me see this book more clearly.
Mississippi seems to be a really great state for writers.
It is. I'm also smoking a cigar here.
Oh, are you?
Okay. You may hear other ambient sounds may include a lighter and hacking cough.
Okay.
But William Faulkner is from Oxford. He lived here, and his house is now a museum here that the university maintains. And until a couple of years ago, this past year, the writer Barry Hanna died. He was here, and Larry Brown died about 4 years ago, another writer.
Mm-hmm.
John Grisham has called this place home for a while, and the writer Richard Ford is moving here in the fall to begin teaching at Ole Miss.
Is he?
In the spot where Barry Hanna left.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. I've interviewed him before. He used to live in New Orleans, then he moved up north.
That's right, yeah. I think he's in Maine now.
Yeah.
And we also hired the writer Chris Offutt, who's from Kentucky originally, but has been living in Iowa City and L.A., and we hired him in screenwriting here at Ole Miss. So our Ole Miss MFA program has really gotten to be quite a good one.
I've also interviewed Chris Offutt. He's a character.
He is a character. I think he'll add a lot to our situation here.
I didn't realize, wow, you really are a hotbed down there. I knew he was in Iowa City, and that memoir he wrote about growing up in Kentucky, I love that book. Have you read that?
Same River Twice.
Yeah, love that book.
Yeah.
Would you consider him a Southern writer, being from Kentucky?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does he count?
I think Kentucky counts, even though I think it touches Ohio at some point.
I think it does. When I think of Southern writers, I think of people like Pat Conroy.
Yeah, I do too. So he's South Carolina, I believe.
Yep, Beaufort. Yeah. Beaufort, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, are you working on a book right now?
I am. I'm afraid to talk about it too much. Or I think I'll lose all the steam, but I certainly am.
Okay. And it's a novel?
I'm actually co-writing a novel with my wife set in the flood of 1927 here in Mississippi.
Now, how does that work, co-writing a book with a poet?
Well, she has much better command of the language. Right now, it's not working too well because we're both so busy with other things. The semester is ending here at Ole Miss and so on. But we hope to get a full draft of it this summer. Just, you know, it's a matter of time for both of us.
I'm not aware of the 1927 flood. What happened?
It's the biggest natural disaster in the country. The Mississippi River just really left its bed and flooded in Mississippi, an area the size of New England.
That sounds pretty bad.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, many, many people lost their lives and land, and it was just awful in every possible way.
And you're not worried about another one right now?
Well, we're a little worried about it. I mean, we have such terrible weather down here. You know, we're all watching just in case.
So you got a place to go if the water starts coming into your yard?
Yeah, we have a boat tied to our porch here.
Do you now?
No.
Okay. And what kind of a cigar is that?
It's an Acid. That's my favorite brand. Is the old Acid cigars?
I don't know that brand.
Oh, they're good. They're from the company's Drew Estates, and they're out of New York, but I think their tobacco fields are in Nicaragua.
I see you're going on a little book tour for this book, and they're sending you to, let's see, Atlanta, Asheville, Raleigh, Portland, San Francisco, and Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Now, that one kind of stands out. What's going on over there?
I think my publicist has a connection there, and she wanted me to go there because I think she can get a big crowd.
Okay. Well, it works for me. And then you close it in New Orleans.
That's right.
So what's that like, being out on book tour?
Yeah, it was fun for a while, and it's still fun if I'm able to see a friend or two, you know, in a given city. But it's really, I mean, you know, it's hard. I mean, I can't imagine how musicians do it all the time, going out somewhere different every night. And it was fun for a while, but now it's hard. That's the best answer I can give.
when did you decide that you're going to be a writer, and how did you make that happen?
I decided probably in my mid-20s that, you know, that I really couldn't do anything else and that this was what I needed to do. Finally, you know, when I started reading really good writers like Barry Hanna and Rick Bass and Flannery O'Connor and William Faulkner, that's when I saw what's possible. And then I really wanted to try and do that.
For those of you just tuning in, my guest is Tom Franklin. His novel, Crooked Letter, just came out in paperback. And he joins us by telephone from Oxford, Mississippi, where he's smoking a cigar outside of his house, watching the water. Hopefully you're not watching the water. Can you see the water?
No, there's no water now.
Okay. Well, I was one of the readers who read the book, and you surprised me, and I'm actually surprised to hear you've had these people come up to you and say, oh, I knew what was going to happen. I knew who did it, because I had no clue.
Well, I think people who read it as a mystery are looking, they're trying to solve the thing all the way through. And I think that is not the right way to read at least this book. I mean, there are only a few characters. It's got to be somebody. There aren't that many places to look for answers. But I think if you read it with that in mind, you're looking, you know, you are going to, it has to be, you know, either somebody. I'm not surprised that people get that, I suppose. But I think if you read it as a novel and not as a mystery, if you read it without any preconceived notions, it's going to be a better experience.
Well, I had to go back and reread the beginning of it after I got a ways in because it made more sense to me to do it that way. When I read the beginning, I was like, wow, what's going on here? And then as I got further in, like the whole bit with the Halloween mask, I guess I didn't understand what I was reading.
Well, I mean, you know, the mask, you know, was always there in terms of, because I had a mask like that. I mean, that's another exactly autobiographical part of the book. I had a mask like that and used it to try to be popular the way that Larry does. And, you know, it just sort of, you know, it. I think it's luck in a way that it all worked out and it found its way into the plot. Those things, I think, you know, if you're reading, say, okay, a mask, this has to be used, and you see I'm trying not to do any spoilers here.
That's good. Don't do that. That's what I'm trying not to do. That's what makes it tough.
I know.
Because it's too easy to do, and that's what really bugs me when I read a book review, or let's say I go to Amazon.com and I read a customer review, and they tell you everything, and it's like, well, why would I want to read the book now?
Absolutely.
It drives me insane, and it's a short drive. So this new book, you kind of got it on the back burner now because the two of you are so busy.
You know, there's one thing to go to and then another thing to go to. It's just I've never been busier, which is great, but also hard.
So you don't really have a timeline, just whenever you get to it?
No, I do. I know. It's due on Labor Day, I believe.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
How's that going to work?
We'll see. I mean, you know, I'm going to hang up with you and go work on it.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's good. I hope I haven't distracted you too much.
Not at all. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.
Okay. Well, I love this book, and I think that's the first time I've ever been able to read a blurb about a book during an interview that I wrote. And I'm sorry that was just so self-aggrandizing, but I wanted you to know that I wrote that about your book and that I love this book. And it was one of my favorite novels last year.
Well, thanks, Vic. I'm really happy, and I've enjoyed talking to you.
And I need to go back now. And was your first book called Smunk?
First book is Poachers.
Okay.
First novel is Hell at the Breach. Second novel is Smunk.
And which one should I start with?
Poachers.
Poachers?
Start at the beginning, yeah.
Okay. Can you give me a clue what that's about?
It's 10 short stories.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to go back and dig that one up. I love discovering a back list. Wow. That was a big one. You must be by the highway.
I am.
Okay. Well, we really appreciate your time today, Tom.
Me too, Vic. Thank you very much, and take care and stay warm and dry.
All righty.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that was Tom Franklin with a lot of ambient sound, and sometimes that happens. You know, that's the way it goes sometimes. You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO, and this is a fabulous novel. It's called Crooked Letter, Crooked Letter, and it was just published in paperback. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks for listening. I apologize for all the ambient sound on that recording, but it could have been worse. Tom Franklin took his portable phone outside because he has some very young children in the house, so it might have been even noisier had he stayed inside. I'm going to read you an excerpt from this wonderful book by Tom Franklin, Crooked Letter, Crooked Letter, just to give you a flavor of what it's all about. This is the part where he goes to the drive-in movie theater. Quote, later, he would do as she told him, ride around alone, take the Buick to the drive-in, park out of sight, and watch through tree limbs as the first feature ended, the movie family fleeing the house in Amityville and its devils. Wait through the intermission, food advertisements, coming attractions, the radio playing songs he didn't hear and describing weather he didn't feel. He waited until the second feature began and then pulled with his lights off past the ticket booth, which, as she'd said, was empty. With the screen flickering over him, he eased the Buick past cars and trucks filled with men and women and the boys and girls, and past the metal poles with their speakers blaring and squawking, past popcorn boxes pushed by the wind, empty Coke cups rolling in his wake. He parked on the row, second from the back, near the corner, shadowed from the moon by trees, lowered his window and unhooked his speaker and watched the people move on the screen. The movie was half an hour in when a car backed out a row up and several slots down. In the light from the movie, he watched it become Ken's father's Ford Fairmont and realized they must have seen him drive in. Its parking lights on, the car rode to the end of the row and turned and began coming back toward him. As it neared the Buick, it slowed, then stopped and backed into the spot behind Larry. Its parking lights snapped off. From there, Ken and David, or Ken and his date, would be able to see that Larry was alone. He reached beneath the seat for the blanket he'd brought. Quickly, he covered his open hand with it and held it up beside his shoulder as if it were a girl's head. Cindy, sitting very close. He watched his rearview mirror, unable to see the Ford's interior. Maybe it wasn't even them, but he knew it was. He sat, hoping they wouldn't get out, even bent his arm as if she were leaning to whisper something in his ear. Maybe kiss him. When his biceps began to tire, a few minutes later, he reached and pulled the armrest from the seat and rested his elbow there, barely aware of the movement on the screen. End quote. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.